Hey guys, if you know me, you know I love to travel and you know I love to save money. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further. Literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships. How to maximize points for real savings, not just free bottled water. How to avoid paying for upgrades you won't use, and so much more. They're doing great work over there. Check it out. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast.
The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thank you for listening. My guest today is Matt Torrey. Before we get to Matt, here's a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com, and there you'll find a lot of good stuff. Some stories that I've written, some stories that some of the guests have written. You'll find photos of me, you'll find photos of the guests, you'll see links to their social media, you'll see links to our social media, which is, of course, Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. That's the big one. That's the one I want you to follow. Let's get those numbers up, shall we? That's cool. Also, we have a Facebook page. You can follow us there as well. You can hear this pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. And if you listen to us on one of those streaming services, as most of you do, I would appreciate it if you give us a good rating, a thumbs up, maybe say a few nice things, help boost our presence there and get more people to find the show. That costs you nothing and it's a cool thing for you to do, so I would appreciate that. If you think you'd be right for the show, or maybe you know somebody you'd be right for the show, maybe you have travel questions you want to ask me, or maybe just tell me I'm awesome, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Matt Torrey wrote me. He is a filmmaker and author based in Sacramento, California. He's got a new book out. He went to all 50 states, visited all national parks in the lower 48. Still has a handful of parks in Alaska that he has to visit, but that's coming up. But still, he has visited all 50 states and wrote a book about it. It's called Go See America. He's got a take on every state in the union and, of course, has a lot to talk about in the national parks. He's got a little humor thrown in there, which is something I can appreciate, of course. Matt is a guy who does things that's kind of up my alley. He makes comedy videos, and he's done a 3-season comedy series that appeared on Tubi. He's made a mockumentary film. He and his friends shot a comedy pilot that they're hoping to sell, and he's hustling. He's creating good things. And one of the things he's been creating is Go See America. And you can buy the book wherever you get your books. It's on Amazon. We'll have a link at traveltalespodcast.com. Here's my chat with Matt Torrey. Matt Torrey, live from Sacktown. Can I call it Sacktown? Is that what people are calling it?
You can, yeah.
Okay.
Some people call it Sacktown here, but I don't know if you're not from Sacktown, if you're allowed to call it that.
So are you a native, born and raised there?
I am, yeah. I was born and raised in Sacramento. I lived in L.A. for a while, but I'm back here for now, right now, yeah.
It's crazy. I've lived in L.A. for about 27 years, and I've seen a lot of California. I know precious little about Sacramento. And I don't think I've really spent any time there. I maybe drove through drove by it going from Tahoe to San Francisco. Would that have brought me through? Okay, good.
Yes, it's basically right in the middle of those two.
Right, okay. What do we need to know about it? I mean, what is its reputation? Other than it's a seat of government.
It's called the City of Trees. It has the most trees anywhere in America, I believe, if I remember the fact correct.
Okay.
It's kind of I love Sacramento just because it's like right on the edge of a bunch of different things if you want to do it. So like you're right on the edge of the foothills heading up into the mountains, Tahoe and all that. You can head over to the beach within an hour if you want. It's just a real nice it's a much different pace than LA, I'll say that.
Which beaches within an hour?
Like Bay Area.
Okay. Wow. Okay. It's that close? Okay. With no traffic.
Yeah. It's a little over an hour probably. Yeah. If you're not going at rush hour.
Yeah. That is some cold water. You jump in first, my man. Go ahead.
Yeah.
So you're a filmmaker. Is that, I'm assuming that's what brought you to LA?
I am. Yeah. I went to film school and then I lived down there. I actually was a tour guide at Sony Studios for a long time, while I was down there as well. And, love it. I still do it. And I'm kind of doing a lot of remote stuff right now. But it's, I do mostly comedy stuff. I'm a writer, director. I do some acting as well. That's not really my forte, but I'll do it because it's fun sometimes. But I'd rather be behind the scenes.
I never met anybody who, like, I had friends who worked at the Universal Tour. And I know some people that still work at Universal. But you don't hear much about the Sony Tour. I mean, it's not one of the big popular ones. What happens at the Sony Tour?
It's so basically you've got like Warner Brothers and Universal. Those are more like a ride. Like it's very like entertainment. Like this, we're giving you a show here. Sony, I loved it because it was very different. It was kind of like, hey, let's go walk around the lot and I'll show you how movies are made. Uh-huh. So I would have like a group of 25 to 30 people. We'd head out. We'd walk onto the sets of shows like Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune, The Goldbergs, whatever movies were filming there at the time. And it'd be kind of cool because people would just kind of see, you know, this is actually what a real set looks like. It's not a real house they're filming at. They're filming here in this fake house. Or we'll go into a scoring stage where they record the music, that kind of stuff. It was much more of a, like, the logistics of how a movie is made kind of thing.
So was it one of those things that you went to film school here? Was it, like, the Film Institute, or was it...
I went to a school called Biola.
Biola.
It's in La Mirada. It's a Christian school, so you may not have heard of it.
That's probably why I haven't.
But they have a real good film program. And so a lot of people that I met there and work with, I still am doing stuff with. So I really liked it.
Now, you did a couple things that you produced your own films and you did a series online, mm-hmm. right? One is the Beach Boys, which is B-E-E-C-H. Explain that to people.
That is basically it's a comedy on Tubi. It's called The Beach Boys, and it's about these pool boys who work in a neighborhood called Beachwood Estates. And just kind of all the silly, stupid antics that they get into. It's a very silly show, but it's a lot of fun. You know, we're still trying to get a bigger audience, but the people that have seen it really seem to like it. We had a big premiere for it and everything, and the response is really good. So it's a really fun show. It's kind of the goal of that show was we wanted every episode to feel different. So if you've kind of seen like Community, for example, is a good reference we always use, like where different episodes were like different parodies of different genres or styles. Kind of every episode feels different of the Beach Boys.
That's fun. So I protested. I picket lined in front of Sony a bunch because it was one of the closer ones toward, there and Netflix were on the west side, closer to where I live. Was it the strike, the pandemic, or the combination of the both that kind of like sent you back to Sacramento, or was it other things?
The pandemic. So I stopped working at Sony because of the pandemic. I mean, that day, that's when we all got let go, basically. And then I guess it's been more than a year and a half. Time just goes so quick. But I stayed down there for another year or two and was still just kind of doing freelance work. And then long story, but my mom was kind of having some health issues, so I wanted to be closer to her, and it's nice to be up here with family. So for right now, it's working good for me.
Okay, so the reason people are probably wondering, why is he on a travel podcast?
Yes.
You have a book out called Go See America, and you went to all 50 states. And mm-hmm. how long did this take you, and when did you decide to do this as a filmmaker?
Sure.
Instead of filming it, why a book?
Yes, that's a good question, actually. So when did I do it is basically the answer is my whole life. So by the time I was 17, I actually had been to all 50 states, but I've probably been to all of or most of them again since then, kind of in a more, you know, thoughtful way of seeing specific things and stuff. But when I was growing up, I was an only child. And we kind of just, when I was off school and stuff, we would head out in the RV every summer, and that's what we would do. That was kind of our goal, was to see all 50 states by the time I was 18, and we did it when I was 17. So, yeah, I was very lucky. We saw a lot. And then since then, I've gone on a lot of different road trips with different friends and stuff. One of my goals was to see all the national parks, and I just accomplished that last year. If you count all of the national parks in the contiguous United States, there's a few in Alaska I have not seen that are pretty difficult to get to. So
yeah, you've been to Alaska, and did you go to like Denali
and
those?
I have not been to Denali. I really want to go, but I've been to like Glacier Bay.
Oh yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
I'll be up there next week. Actually, working.
Oh really?
I'm doing a cruise ship, so I'll be in Alaska a lot this summer.
You could do a lot of cruises, right? You probably see a lot of stuff that way.
A lot of Glacier Bay, a lot of Glacier Bay. I've been first year I went down there, I think it was 2015. And, but you can notice like with the naked eye, the glaciers, shrinking, which is heartbreaking really, but, it's still beautiful, it's bad.
Yeah, same with Glacier National Park. I'm sure. Have you been there? I'm sure you have.
I did. But that was a COVID trip for me.
Okay, yeah. But they say that by their estimates, the glaciers will be gone by like 2040 or something, and that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, so I had like a few states left during COVID that I had to see, and my last two states were Montana and Wyoming. So in 2021, I got
those
are
two really good ones. Yeah,
yeah, I got in the car and we drove up. So went up, and I also hadn't done a lot of those national parks in Utah. You know, So I did Bryce Canyon and Moab, and you know all those up there, and then headed on up to Yellowstone and Glacier National Park, which were really amazing, really amazing.
Yeah. I think COVID inspired a lot of people to do that. And that was kind of around when I was starting to think of writing this book, too, because I had seen so many things. I've been so many places, and I kind of have a reputation among my circle of people that I'm always the guy people ask of like, hey, we're going to this area, or where should we go? What should we do? What restaurants should we go to? You know, all that kind of stuff, just because I have a reputation that I've probably been there if it's somewhere in America. So at one point I was like, I just need to write all this down and get it all my thoughts and all my stories and all my recommendations in a book. So why I didn't do it in film, that's a good question. But I like holding the book. There's just something about holding a tactile book to me that's really fun. And this is kind of just an introduction to my favorite places. It's not really like a detailed Rick Steves guidebook or nothing. It's more of like, hey, all these really cool things are right around you here in America. You should go see them.
But also as a performer, did you look at it and go, hey, maybe I should shoot this for TikTok or Instagram or something?
I'm boring. I don't really do social media stuff. It's not like I much rather would focus on a year of my life making an hour long movie than, you know, post different videos every day and stuff.
Yeah, I get that. So when you decided to take on the book, certainly, I'm sure you've probably spent more time in certain states than others. Did you feel like, okay, I got to write something about Alabama? It's been like how many years since I've been there? Were you going from memory, or were you going like, you know?
A lot of it was memory, but also I was doing kind of research to remind myself of the specific places I went and things I remember doing, but maybe not didn't remember the exact name of that beach or something. You know what I mean? But I did really try really hard to make it a good collection of things in every corner of America. That being said, not exactly every state has something. I think there's five or six states that just didn't make the cut of what I thought were like the top list of things that I wanted to include. So I think Alabama is one of those states, unfortunately.
In terms of like, you didn't include it in the book at all? I mean, it says all 50 states.
Like, there's not a specific location in the book. So basically I have the book spread out into eight different regions of America, and there's kind of like, you know, 15 to 20 locations for each region.
So when you go to these places, I mean, are you an active guy? Like you're into hiking or doing these kind of things? Are you into history? You want to go see like battle sites or whatever? You know, what's your thing?
I'm kind of all of it. I love it. I love it all. I love whenever I go, like I'll try to go on like a road trip with my parents every now and then too, because we still love doing that together. And my mom will just get so frustrated with all the, you know, historical sites that me or my dad want to see, or I'll drag them also, or my friends, to like random movie filming locations. I was just listening to an episode of your show where you talk to someone who does that. I just kind of love all of it. I do a lot of hiking. I'm not like a backpacker who goes, you know, for days into the backcountry or nothing, but I'll definitely do a couple hour hike to a really nice view if it's worth it. It's great. There's all kinds of, but there's all, yeah, I just love everything. That's kind of I also, speaking of that, that's also why I tried to write the book, because I wanted it to be a mix of that as well. There's some historical sites, there's some, you know, beautiful places, hikes, that kind of stuff.
So you grew up in an RV family, basically. So was this like camping in the national parks, or you're pulling off into like KOAs around the country, or?
We did a little bit of both. The big trip that we always talk about that we did was when I was 7 years old, and they pulled me out of school basically. And they said, hey, my dad basically at his job, like every few years, they got a few months off work. And so he basically was like, hey, you're going to learn more out seeing things than you will in school. Let's go. So like for 2 or 3 months, we just drove around the country and went everywhere.
Wow. How did he get that time off work?
Well, at his job, like every 7 years, they give you that time off. I don't, you know, it's a good job, I guess. So
yeah,
he's an engineer, very, very different than my calling.
Ah, got it. So give me your worst RV breakdown story. You have any kind of bad ones?
Worst RV breakdown. Well, to be fair, I was younger when I did a lot of the RV stuff, so I wasn't probably as frustrated by the RV stuff. But as I've gotten older, there's been plenty of times, like in a car that's broken down, or I was just in a road trip with my buddy a year and a half ago in the Midwest, and our car broke down, and he realized after it broke down that he didn't have a spare tire. And so we had to wait basically to be, you know, towed into the city, and we spent the day at AutoZone. And then, one of the stories I talk about in the book is at Death Valley. It's not a car breakdown, but basically we were camping in Death Valley, and, it got super, super windy, and our tent basically ripped in half, completely in half, just from the wind. And we were just stuck there in the middle of the night with no tent or anything. So we just had to drive in the middle of the night to Las Vegas, 2 hours away, which was the closest thing. So,
oof. How about animal encounters? Any of those? Any bears coming up to your tent in the middle of the night?
I did have I go to Yosemite a lot because it's really close here. And I went alone a year ago or so. And I was just sitting by the campfire one night reading, and I heard these footprints, and I look over, and a bear had wandered into my camp, and I just kind of sat there looking, and it kind of just walked right in between me and the fire, just kind of sniffing around and kept going. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. He wasn't interested in me, but I was like right on the edge of the campground. So, you know, he was coming from somewhere looking for food or something.
Yeah. People don't realize they can smell your food from like a mile away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they'll smell it in the car. They will smell it anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll rip open your car. I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, they do. Yeah. In Yosemite, especially, they've trained themselves to open cars. It used to be back in the day, they would encourage people to like feed bears and stuff. And then they realized that that's not a good strategy at all.
No, not at all. So you said there's a few up in Alaska you want to hit.
Yes.
Denali being one of them. What are some of the other ones that are on your bucket list?
So there's seven. So there's 8 national parks in Alaska, and there's 7 I haven't been to. So I've just been to Glacier Bay. I need to hit all the other 7. The thing about those, though, is that I think 2 or 3 of them, like, you can't even drive to. You can't get to unless you take like a charter plane. So it's like really expensive. And I think like the planes only go in once a week or something. So to go there, you basically have to commit to backpacking in the wilderness for a week. and it's not something most people are going to.
Yeah, that's a commitment.
So, yeah, at some point I do want to do it, but it's going to be not probably in the near future, but sometime.
Now, you went to Glacier Bay. Was that a cruise or was that?
That was on a cruise. Yeah. Alaska is beautiful. And they just cruise you right in there.
Oh, yeah.
You could go right by the glaciers and the whales and everything.
Trouble with Alaska, beautiful. Though, is it's so huge. I mean, you really got to leave some time, you know, not just to get up there, but you got to you know, if you want to drive or something, I mean, it's a long distance. You're talking
Glacier
big
Bay
distance.
Also is just like the very bottom of the state. People don't realize like that whole area. You usually go on cruises like Juneau and Ketchikan. And
I'll be there next week. But I always tell people, it's like, you're only seeing the southeast corner of that gigantic state. I mean, I always tell people if they're going to go, try to add a land portion to it. I mean, the tours they'll at least put in Denali usually for a, if you're going in and out of Juneau, in or out of Juneau, or not Juneau, Whittier or Anchorage, they'll add like a land portion, which you can do. And you can do that for like 5 days, 5 to 7 days. But even that, it's not, it's a commitment and it's expensive.
Yeah, it is.
It ain't cheap up there either.
It's just covering so much ground.
Yeah, totally. How about in the lower 48? Was there something that you, a part of the country that you want to get back to that you're going like, I don't think I gave this a full shake?
There's a lot of places I'd love to go back. I think that I've pretty much, I may be exaggerating, but I think I've been everywhere that I would want to go in America for the most part. There are places I would like to explore more. I would love to explore like the San Juan Islands up in Washington more. I know that in northern Georgia, there's some mountain towns and stuff that are supposed to be real nice that I haven't been to, like Helen, Georgia, and stuff like that. But for the most part, I've been everywhere that I wanted to go. And that's kind of when I hit that, I was like, okay, now I can write this book.
How about a national park that you didn't really think much of going into it, but that kind of blew you away?
I know exactly the answer to this, and it's Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
Have you been there? I don't even know where it is.
It's in North Dakota.
Nope, I haven't been.
And you think North Dakota and you think, oh, well, I don't know how scenic that's going to be, but I didn't have high expectations going in. I was on a road trip with my friend Daniel, and we were going up there just to hit it because I was on this mission of, hitting all the national parks. And so we drove up there, and it was just like the most beautiful day that I've ever spent in a national park. It was just what the park is. It's just rolling hills for as long as you can see, and some rivers and bison, and it's also famous for all the wild horses.
Basically,
there's just herds and herds of wild horses, beautiful horses that are just running around through the hills, and it's not crowded at all compared to most national parks. So you're there and you're just driving through what seems like to be all by yourself, and you're passing hundreds of bison and horses and prairie dogs that are all off the side of the road in their holes and everything. It just, it was very surprising to me how beautiful it was.
Oh yeah. Well, now you put it on my radar.
Yeah.
How about the one that's most overrated? That could also be the Dakotas as well, because everybody's disappointed with Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I don't know. Mount Rushmore, I think it's worth seeing.
It's out of the way. It's far out of the way, and you get there, and you're like, you're farther away from it than you think you.
Yeah.
You think you're going to be closer, then it's pretty far away.
And then if you get up close, you're like craning your neck to see the bottom of their heads.
And then now we got to drive 4 hours back or something,
Yeah. But actually, to be fair, I think the area around there is very beautiful. More than Mount Rushmore. If you've been to Custer State Park, which is right near Mount Rushmore, it's very beautiful. Like the drive through the mountains in there and stuff. It's worth going to more than Mount Rushmore.
Right. I mean, like when I'm overseas and people ask me about what parks to hit, it's such a huge country. And it's like, first you got to ask them, okay, what region are you going to be in?
Yeah.
Most of them are out west. I mean, really, kind of the big money ones. I mean, the ones they have to do, I always say, there's the Grand Canyon and Yellowstone, really, are the two big ones. And the problem with Yellowstone, I guess maybe you can back this up, or maybe you think otherwise, it's just too damn popular, right? It's just
too
crowded.
Too big. It's big. People think they can just go there and like on a day trip or something, and it's not really something you can do.
Right. And getting more and more crowded. I mean, I think they are,
well, that's
they are
all
starting
the
to curb
parks,
it.
Unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. Is this a trend you've seen in the last 10, 20 years of just the
Definitely.
Crowds?
I mean, like Yosemite is my favorite probably. Just I might be just more attached to it because I've been 100 times. But you go there and it's just so crowded. It's still worth going to because it's just like the most beautiful place in the world. But it just it's so hard to find parking, and every trail and everything is just a line of people. So it kind of is a different feel than what you would hope. But sometimes you just got to kind of deal with that to see nice places.
Yeah. And you can tell people, it's like, look, try to avoid July and August. I mean, that's, that's all you can do, really. But if you're going to try to go to those places in July and August, you're good luck. That's
and
all
Yosemite's
I tell people.
Yosemite's better in the spring anyways, when the waterfalls are at their highest. If you go in April, and that's when it's the best. So
okay, that's what I was going to ask you, though. Give us some more insider tips on when to go to these certain places that you can recommend.
Well, like you said, you pretty much anywhere, the answer is not summer.
Right. yeah.
But like as Yosemite especially, because we're like only a few hours from it here, a lot of people will ask like, oh, what should I do or when should we go? And I always tell them go in April or May because that's when the waterfalls are at their peak and it's before all the big crowds. It's always crowded when you go there, but it's not as bad in those months.
Right. And it sounds like the exception is the Roosevelt one up in North Dakota. You could do that one in the summer, and that would be fine.
It's just so far away.
Yeah.
I went like July, middle of July to that one, and it's just so far away that the average traveler is not going to go 5 hours out of their way to go see that. So,
does every state have a national park in it?
No.
Okay.
No.
They have state parks. Every state has state parks, right? I mean.
Yeah. So basically, there's 63 national parks. But there's also like 600 and something sites that the national parks oversee. So it's kind of confusing. There might be one of those in every state. I'm not sure. But those count as like all the battlefields and the, you know, national lake shores and, you know, all their different terminology. But there's only 63 what they call the national parks, which are like the top tier ones that get all the attention.
Well, someone who's based in the West, farthest from you would be the South, you know, and the Atlantic and Florida and Georgia and Mississippi and all that stuff. What did you know going in, and what were you really looking for when you went to the South, like the first time, and then went back?
I've actually been there a lot, that area, because my grandparents are in Florida, so we would go there at least once a year or so. But there's actually a lot of places in Florida that are really nice, as you would expect. You know, it's very beautiful, beaches and stuff. There's actually a national park that most people have never heard of in Florida called Dry Tortugas National Park. And have you been there?
Yeah, it's the islands down at the bottom there. And most people know the Everglades. But yeah, the Dry Tortugas, it's like off the Keys, right?
Yeah, you got to drive all the way down the Keys to Key West, and then from Key West you take a 70-mile ferry to Dry Tortugas, which is basically it's a few islands, but the island that the ferry takes you to is a old Civil War fort that's basically just been abandoned, and you can explore it and walk around, and it's just on a beautiful island where you can, you know, snorkel and sit on the beach, and it's real pretty.
Well, let's take it by region then. So in the South, you got the Tortugas, and what other places did you recommend down there?
Let's see. North Carolina is kind of the South still, but that actually North Carolina has a lot of pretty spots. If you've heard of Chimney Rock, it's actually unfortunately a place that just kind of got destroyed by a hurricane.
Right.
Hopefully they'll have that, you know, up again for people. That it's real pretty. Chimney Rock and Lake Lure. It's where they filmed Dirty Dancing.
Oh, right. Okay.
So let me think. What else? I got my book here. Let me see what I have in the South here.
It's
hard. There's so many places that it's hard to remember all. sometimes.
I mean, I'm thinking like North Carolina. I mean, North Carolina is big in the fact that it's got the beach there, like the Outer Banks and all that other stuff. But I don't know if that's a state park. And then you got the mountains.
The Outer Banks is a national seashore, they call it.
Okay.
So it's run by the national parks, but it's not technically a national park.
How about up in the mountains, like in Asheville and all that stuff? Is that the Smoky Mountains, I guess, would be?
Yeah, Great Smoky Mountains is there. I put Dollywood in my book as well.
Sure.
Because I was very impressed by Dollywood for some reason. I went there and I was like, why is there a theme park about Dolly Parton? This seems very absurd to me.
Because she's a national treasure. That's why.
I know, but now I'm more on board with you now after having gone. But I went there and I just was very impressed by it. It was so much fun. And I was like, oh, why have I never been here? Why have I not heard of this before? I had heard of it, but like I didn't know that it was such a fun place.
What'd you like about it? I mean, the ride's good. I haven't been.
The cinnamon bread.
Okay.
And the lightning rod roller coaster.
All right. All
which
right.
is the fastest wooden roller coaster, they said, in the world or something.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good. I mean, when that opened, I remember it's probably been open like 30 years or something. And when it first opened, I was like, there's no way this thing's going to last. I mean, God love her, but that's pretty bold to have your own amusement park, and it's still going. It's pretty amazing.
Still goes,
that's pretty amazing. So, okay, you're going through the South. You did all that. How about the New England and stuff like that? I mean, there's a lot to see up in, of course, Vermont and Maine and all those things.
New England's beautiful just as well. My favorite spot's Maine. I love Maine.
Sure.
I love the coastal drive, Route 1, just along the whole coast of Maine. All the little towns that you go through, it's just beautiful.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Acadia, of course.
Okay. Well, I'm a Midwest guy. I'm from Chicago.
Okay.
There's not a, you know, Illinois doesn't have really a ton of, do we have a national park? I don't even know.
No.
Yeah.
But
okay.
You have,
we have state parks.
The closest one to you would be Indiana Dunes.
The Dunes,
national park.
We used to go there to go to the beach, the quote-unquote beach. That was our beach.
Yeah.
So I went there on Senior Ditch Day. I remember that was our big trip to the dunes. So that was, I mean, those are nice, but that's Indiana. So we have to give that to them. Wisconsin, I think, has a couple.
Wisconsin
maybe.
Actually has some very pretty spots.
Beautiful.
There's the Apostle Islands.
Mm-hmm.
Which is real pretty. And then if you've been to Devil's Lake.
Yep.
Yeah,
sure.
Real pretty.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you get up into Minnesota where there's tons of, talk about lakes, the Land O' Lakes.
Yep.
What is the national park in Michigan?
Michigan doesn't have one technically. There is one in Minnesota.
Okay.
Unless I'm just not remembering right now, but there is one in Minnesota called Voyageurs.
Oh, I don't think I know that
and
one.
It's basically up at the border of Minnesota and Canada. And it's kind of like where all the lakes are. And it's another one that's pretty remote. You got to be going out of your way specifically to go see that.
Right.
And it's basically, it's thousands of islands and lakes and stuff in really remote area.
So you talked about the Dakotas and stuff and being up there in North Dakota. Once you get in the Midwest there and you're like in your Kansas and your, you know, Oklahoma and Nebraska and stuff like that, it's a lot of corn.
Yeah.
I mean, is it mostly?
Well, that's basically when I say the states that I didn't include, it's basically those ones like Oklahoma. Oh, well, there's things to see there, but it's not like what I put in my list of the best things in America. I think Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas, those ones didn't make the cut.
You got a lot of, burial sites and war stuff, you know, and Native American stuff, but it's not really national parks, really. So much, right?
Not really in that area. No, there is, you talk about like burial sites and stuff. There's always, I'm a big history fan. So I also had a goal to go to like all the president's houses and grave sites.
Oh,
and
I've
done all those now too. So we'll always go like out of our way to some random city in, you know, Kansas or whatever, like Dwight Eisenhower's from Kansas. So I went to his house and his burial site, you know.
What about in Texas? I mean, what national park? I know is the Alamo a national park or a state park?
No, they have a national park. They actually have two. They're kind of not more known ones, but there's one called the Guadalupe Mountains.
Okay.
And then there's one called Big Bend, which is basically down on the border with Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't been to either.
They're both worth going to. Big Bend is more so worth going to.
Okay.
Guadalupe, from what I hear, is really good for hiking. I didn't do any hiking there, though.
All right. And then you get out west, and then you get into the good stuff. You know, you get your money shots in the in the canyons and everything else. Grand Canyon's an obvious one. Do you have any tips on visiting the Grand Canyon other than don't go in the summer?
You know what? I love the Grand Canyon, but I think that it's not the best of the ones around there. I think all the ones in Utah are better to go to be honest. I think Zion and Bryce Canyon and Arches and all those are more – there's more to do there and more to see.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Grand Canyon is so iconic, you got to see it. And it is pretty impressive when you sit there and you're like, wow, I could not – understand from a picture how big this is.
Bryce was like nowhere I had ever seen, really. I mean, that was pretty amazing. You know, I had seen photos of it, but it's like, wow, this is really cool.
It's like something out of like a Dr. Seuss book or something.
It really is.
The weird formations.
What about New Mexico? I mean, what's in there?
I keep mentioning national parks, but because they're good, there's a national park in New Mexico that's really cool called White Sands National Park.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it's where they did like the first nuclear bomb tests.
Oh, yeah. That's why I've heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so basically it's a national park now. And what's different about it is that it's not sand like that you see at the beach. It's out of gypsum. So basically, when you go there and you're walking around, even if it's 120 degrees out, the sand will not be hot. It doesn't absorb heat. So the sand is always cool. And so it's really fun to just walk around and it's like you're walking through snow almost, kind of.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So in out west, you know, everybody knows in California, they know Death Valley, they know Yosemite, everybody knows.
Yeah.
Yellowstone and stuff. Is there a hidden one that you went off the beaten path that you could give some love to?
Well, you mentioned all the big national parks. I'll mention something that I put in the book that I guarantee most people have not heard of. And it's, I might be a little biased because it's kind of close to me, but I love it so much. And that's why I included it. It's called Apple Hill. And it's an area in between kind of Sacramento and Tahoe, with just a bunch of farms and rolling hills. And it gets really popular in the fall for people to go visit and just have everything Apple related. It's just, there's like, I think something like 200, 300 farms that are all open at the same time. And people take like a week sometimes just going to all of them and going to the vineyards and exploring there. It's kind of near Placerville, if you've heard of that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What about like Washington State and Idaho and like Oregon and those places?
Again, a lot of stuff, a lot of good places.
There's a lot.
There's a lot. I mean, the big ones that most people would say are Crater Lake in Oregon. There's a state park in Oregon called Silver Falls, which is really pretty. And it's basically it's a walkway that I think is like 6 or 7 miles long if you do the whole thing. But it's a loop, and it basically goes past like 12 waterfalls all in this one spot. It's really cool. Up in Washington, of course, you've got Mount Rainier, really pretty. You've got Olympic Peninsula, which has Olympic National Park and all of that over there, all the rainforests. In Idaho, you've got Craters of the Moon. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's all like the caves you can wander through and stuff.
Okay. Well, one more, and then we'll get off the parks for a little bit. I just came back from Hawaii, and we were in Kauai, which there was state parks we went to there, and the Waimea Canyon, which was pretty amazing, which is, looks like a little, greener, lusher Grand Canyon a little bit.
Yes.
But the national park, I think, is volcanoes, right? And I think one erupted this week while we were there. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So did you go to that one?
Yeah, I've been to those. On the Big Island, the Volcanoes National Park, it's pretty big. You can drive all around and see. I've never been there when they're actually erupting. I would love to see that.
Oh, yeah. It was some crazy video some friends of mine posted. It was really nuts. But it's so amazing to look at, though. I don't want
to kind of go up to different parts where steam is rising from the ground.
Oh yeah, I've and going into the ocean.
Yes, yeah,
that's kind of cool. So you talked about the parks and stuff, and I know you're like you like nature and things like that. Are you much of a city guy? Does the book cover much of your favorite cities and what you like to do, or did you kind of avoid the big cities?
There's not a lot of cities in there. It's mostly, I think I have the cities, kind of smaller cities, not the big cities. I have like Charleston, South Carolina, Savannah, Georgia. I do have downtown Chicago on there, like the Riverwalk. In terms of other big cities, though, I don't think that I put much. I put Griffith Observatory in L.A. I put Central Park in New York. That was one of my spots. It's kind of – and it's a kind of an antidote to the big city.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think you think it's more about being in nature than cities.
It's more so –
yeah.
It's more a lot so of coverage, nature, you know? And – interesting spots you may not have heard of. Yeah.
Right. Well, how about, you know, going around differently when you're a kid and then as an adult? I mean, there are some places you went as a kid that you went, you know what, I should revisit this as an adult because maybe I'll get a different take on it.
Mm-hmm. That was my experience a lot with the Southwest. So like, you know, Grand Canyon, Utah. I remember going there as a kid, but I don't really remember thinking it was anything special. It just kind of was something to look at outside the RV, you know. But when I went back a couple times since then on different road trips, it just blows you away how much there is to see and do there. And I think it's probably my favorite region of America. Just all of the beautiful hikes and canyons and things you can see.
Yeah, I was far too old when I learned that I guess on public lands, like national public lands, we're all free to camp on them. Is that true? Or I don't know how that works.
I think it's more complicated than that. But yeah, it's kind of like it has to be like a Bureau of Federal Land.
Yeah, BLM.
Not like a national park. Yeah.
But how do you know?
there's websites that you can look up. Yeah. There's websites where people have put all that together in maps and showed you where you can camp for free.
Yeah. You hate to be that, you know, make that mistake and you think, oh, this is public land. And then you're on some farmer's land and he comes out all angry and stuff. So in these trips, did you ever have any run-ins with like that? Like accidentally being on someone's private land or any run-ins with cops or anything like that?
To be honest, no. I'm almost to a fault. I prepare and I make sure that everything's going to go well and not have any, you know, mix-ups. But of course, stuff happens. Then that's part of the fun when you look back, even though it's not fun when it's happening. But no, I don't really have any fun stories for you there, unfortunately.
How much of the travel in the book was done post COVID and how much like pre?
I would say I've probably been to over half these places post COVID.
Okay. All right. And it was weird. You know, like I said, I did those canyons in Southern Utah and then Yellowstone up, you know, like in 2021 and coming from California and then going to Utah and Wyoming and stuff. It was like two highly different takes on the pandemic in terms of masks and stuff like that. Was that kind of jarring for like when you?
It was. I had a road trip planned in 2020 with one of my best friends. And we were going to see, like, that was when we went to the Dakotas we went through Colorado a bit as well. And when COVID hit, we were kind of talking back and forth, like, hey, do you think we're still going to be able to go? What's going on? And we ended up still going. It was in end of June, early July. And it was kind of right when things were starting to open up and in that area more specifically than in California. But it was very strange, I remember, to go from basically not interacting with people in real life at all to then we're at Mount Rushmore and it was 1,000 people, no masks.
Right. It was weird.
Yeah. And it was just like, wow, this is so weird that people are just not even thinking it's the same here. Yeah.
Yeah. There was no rhyme or reason to any.
And it wasn't really gradual. It was kind of like for a few months, I had not really interacted with many people in real life and, you know, without masks or whatever Oh, now I'm in a crowd of 1,000 people here at Mount Rushmore.
I went from Santa Monica, which was really locked down. For a couple months, and then in May, right when the riots started, in 2020, that's when I threw everything in the car and kind of like drove and met a friend of mine out by in Utah and near Zion, and it was crazy. I think the first to go from that, and then I got out of the car and went to like a supermarket in Utah, and I was the only one wearing a mask, and it was like whoa. It was like I drove into a different country. It was pretty wild.
It was a weird time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you see a lot of places basically when you're on the road, like doing shows and stuff? Is that kind of what gives you an excuse to see most of these places?
I mean, I was doing comedy on the road for, you know, over 30 years. You know, I started in the Midwest, so that showed me a lot of the country, you know, that I hadn't seen before. And that kind of like lit more of a travel bug in me, but I would also be in these places like in North Dakota or Nebraska or Michigan or something with full days to kill. And so I would, you know, I'd go check out a site or, you know, a historical thing or whatever it was just to be interested. But what people don't realize, especially from other countries, it's just how big America is and how varied it is. And I don't think do you find that a lot of Americans don't even seem to realize it?
Yeah, and that's, to be honest, that was kind of one of the reasons I wanted to write this, because I'll mention places to people and they're never heard of it, and people are always going off to different countries, which is great. There's a lot of great places to see, but I don't think people understand how many interesting and awesome places there are right here in America that you could see that are really cool, and you don't have to spend as much money to go see it, and you can kind of go on a road trip or fly to different places in America and see all sorts of different stuff right in your backyard.
I think they say the average amount of states people have been to is like 5 or something. You know, it's pretty incredible, and they take for granted the fact that look, if you live somewhere in like in Europe, you know, you say you live in the Netherlands. And your partner is there. If you want to retire in warm weather, you have to move to a new country. You know what I mean? If you want a different climate zone, you have to get a green card or a visa or whatever and leave, and maybe even learn a new language. Here we are like 5-6 different climate zones. We don't have, you can move anywhere, but most people don't. I think they end up living within 100 miles or 80 miles of where they were born. It's pretty amazing. And look, there's a lot of reasons to leave. A lot of people don't. And, you know, money and family have a lot to do with it. But some people just, I don't know, they just don't. And I say, you don't know how lucky you have it. I grew up in cold weather and hated it. So I was like, I never planned on living. I didn't want to scrape my windshield my whole life. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I was born in a place where I didn't have to, you know, get a green card or a work visa to live in warm weather. So, or move for different. I mean, you moved a long way for, you stay in state, but people don't realize how big California is. You're like seven, 8 hours from me, and people think it's close, you know? Oh, why don't you guys have lunch?
Whereas if you're in Europe, 8 hours could take you through three or four countries.
Exactly. So, you know, we take a lot for granted here. Did it make you like, however long you do, you want to stay in Sacramento, or have you gone to places where you're going, you know what, this is like someplace I could live when I'm older?
Well, my dream that I don't know how realistic it is I want to live in Hawaii one day.
Yeah, okay.
That would be my dream. But I don't know how realistic that would be financially, as well as with what I'm doing in the film industry, to have to go back and forth from Hawaii to do stuff. I don't know. But maybe someday.
Yeah, as someone who just kind of looked at real estate prices for fun when we were just in Kauai, bring money. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, Hawaii is great if you never want to leave it. You know what I mean? It's just like, because if you want to travel or do anything, it's a hassle to get anywhere. You know, it's 6 hours just from L.A. You know, it's really far, but it
and
is beautiful.
I think after living there for 6 months a year, you might start to get a little, feel like, oh, I want to go somewhere.
That's the other thing. I think I would go a little island crazy for a little.
Yeah.
But it's still great to visit, man. The best is to have a friend with a nice house there. That's the best. That's the ideal thing. So what do you, there's a lot of talk about national parks now, and we're not a political show, but what do you think, looking ahead, that the biggest thing affecting parks, we talked about crowds, what could the national park system do better in your eyes? Whether it's like, we didn't talk about passes too. I mean, people ask me about, should I get the year pass, or is there a month pass you can get to that will let you in these places?
No, they have the annual pass and it's like $80.
Okay.
Which if you're going to a couple in a year, it's worth it. Cause it's depending on the park, you're going to pay $30-$40 to get in. Unfortunately with crowds and stuff, I don't know if there is much you can do. Cause it's not like you can expand the size of the place, you know? So they've kind of done what they can do in terms of reservations and making sure that it's not overcrowded. But at the same time, you don't want to block people from experiencing these places. So I never really know where the line is in terms of, I know a lot of people talk about not wanting to promote a lot of places because they don't want it to be overcrowded and stuff. But I think that, I mean, if that's one of the blessings of living in America is that you can see it. So I don't know why we would not want people to go there. But, yeah, it's a tricky thing. I don't really know what the right answer is there.
What do you think they're doing well? What do you think the parks
are
doing?
I think the national parks, just like the famous quote says, it's America's best idea. It's the fact that we set aside these places in America because we had enough forethought and insight to say, hey, in 100 years, our future generations are going to want to experience these places, and we want to make sure that they're not just covered in buildings and logging fields and stuff. We need to protect them. And a lot of other places and countries have done that, but we were really at the forefront of that back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, where that wasn't something that was talked about as much. And I think Abraham Lincoln signed the first one that set aside Yosemite. And then that kind of inspired the creation of the national parks. And it's really, I mean, we're all in their debt because we get to go see these things just like they've always been, and we don't have to worry about them not being there someday.
Was Teddy Roosevelt the one that really kind of put it in motion? He's credited for a lot of that.
Yeah. Teddy Roosevelt didn't create it, but he's kind of considered the father of the national parks in terms of he really put a big emphasis on protecting a lot more places. I think something like under his, when he was president, like more than double the amount of sites that were protected, he protected. And he basically made it a mission of the government to put that as a priority.
What did you learn about America and its history, seeing all these places and going to all these states, I mean, that you didn't know before?
I think America, it's, you know, I'm not the first person to say it, but America is just so unique. It's unlike anywhere else. And it's not that we're better than anywhere else. We're just a lot more different than anywhere else, because there's nowhere else in the world that has so many different geographical regions, cultures, experiences, backgrounds. And the fact that you can go to all these different places and meet all these different kinds of people in different corners of the country, and it feels like you're in a totally different place, is just such a unique thing that I think exists only here.
Do you cover? Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say in a special way.
Yeah. Do you cover food much? I mean, are you much of a foodie? Does the book like touch on?
I mentioned a couple places. Okay. I mentioned a couple places, but I'm not a food critic or nothing. So I didn't want to get too much into that where people would be like, oh, why didn't you recommend these 100 restaurants or, you know.
Right.
But I mentioned a couple places where it's like, oh, wow, I had the best burger of my life here, or I had the best piece of pie ever here, you know.
Okay. So is there a region that you really love? Are you like a barbecue guy? Or did you, you know, the different...
I love barbecue. Barbecue is my favorite in the world.
So you, what's your thoughts on like North Carolina dry rub kind of barbecue versus, say, a St. Louis or a Texas kind of barbecue? Because they're all different.
I love it all. I love it all. I'll make that clear.
Okay.
But
yeah, I mean,
I like the St. Louis style better, probably.
Okay, so big.
One of the best places I ever had barbecue was in St. Louis at a place called Spitfire.
Spitfire. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple big one, like famous ones in St. Louis that I can't remember. They're all about the like the baby backs. They're known for the back ribs. And, yeah, I'm with you on that one too. I like them all, but yeah, they're all good. How about a regional food that you tasted? People are like, you got to have this. And you were like, I don't know. I don't know if that's my thing.
You know, in Michigan, they love what they call pasties.
Oh.
When you read it, you think it's pronounced pasties, but they'll correct you and say it's pasties.
It's like a sandwich or something?
It's like what you would think of like a calzone almost.
Right.
It's like a fried breaded thing with meat and vegetables on the inside. It was okay, but like I didn't really understand why it's such a big thing up there.
It's like an empanada. When you go to Argentina, it's like what you get them every corner. It's like an empanada.
Yeah.
It's deep fried. Yeah. I get it. It's a lot of bread though. It's a lot of pastry. Yeah, yeah. How about a place that you're dying to get back to?
I would love to explore, even though I've been there a lot, the Southwest, I would love to explore some of the more remote areas more, like Canyonlands National Park. There's a lot of like hikes you can go on there that I didn't really have time for the couple times that I've been there. I could go there for that whole region for a month and still have things I want to do probably.
What, they say America now, it's people ask for very divided, and I have to entertain people from all walks of life. And, but I do find that people tend to be more alike than different. Did you find that going around the country?
Yes. I think that's the case, whether in America or the world too. I mean, and you probably know that more than me. You've probably been a lot more places outside the country than I have. people all basically want the same things. And if you're talking to them in person, you're very rarely going to have a negative interaction with someone unless there's, you know, something else going on. But most of the time, people all are basically, you know, want the same things and are good, I think.
What about
in America? There's a lot of, you know, you'll go a lot of places in America where it doesn't matter how you vote or whatever, but you'll see a lot more signs of one candidate for one person in one area and other. But if you talk to people, they're all the same, basically. They, you know.
Yeah. Did this inspire you to like maybe, I don't know how much foreign travel have you done, but are there places you're dying to go overseas?
I would love to. I've actually done a fair amount. I've been to around 30 countries. But there's so many places. I really want to go to Australia. I really want to go to Japan.
Those are winners.
Those are my top two, probably, yeah.
I recommend them both. So where have you gone that you've like, you know?
I've been a lot in Europe.
Okay.
You know, all those countries in Europe. That's how I racked up most of those numbers, and then in like the Caribbean, all those island countries.
Yeah. Did you do the Ural Pass and get a train and kind of backpack around?
We did a bit of that. Yeah.
That's a good way to.
It's fun.
Good way to taste.
I would love to go there too. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I would love to go back there. Yeah.
The world is huge. It's really huge.
It is. There's so much to see.
What about what's next for you, film wise or entertainment wise? Are you still making movies or are you?
I am. Yeah. I'm always kind of got my hands in different things. I just created a sketch comedy show with a couple buddies that I've been doing a lot of stuff with. It's called Halfway Handsome. And we basically did a Kickstarter. We did a big campaign to make the first episode about a year ago. We shot that, and it's actually premiering at the Chinese Theater
oh.
On June 28th as part of the Dances with Films Film Festival.
Oh, fun.
So I directed that, and I wrote it with them as well. And it's kind of a, basically, if you've seen like Key and Peele or I Think You Should Leave, that's kind of the model of, it's going to be like three or four sketches an episode. So we shot the first episode, and it'll premiere there. And the hope is that it gets picked up, or we can get funding to make more of it.
Well, that's fun. Are these with buddies of yours?
Yeah, these are so basically I have a couple friends named J.J. Carroll and Josh Fossil that I've done a lot of stuff with, like the Beach Boys and some other social media channels that we do content for. And then we got hooked up with a friend of ours. His name is Jamie Costa. And you may not know him by name, but you probably have seen his different videos. He got super viral for his Robin Williams impressions.
Oh, okay.
And the four of us kind of got together and said we wanted to make something together. So we've been working on this for a while.
Oh, great. We'll have links to wherever you want people to go to on there. Where can people follow you, like on Instagram and stuff?
If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's just my name, Matthew Torrey, MatthewTorry. And then I don't post a lot on there, but you know, that'll be, I'll always post links or whatever when I have like a new movie or show or something that we have coming out. So yeah, that would be the main thing probably.
So finally, Matt, what do you think all this travel and all that you've seen, how has it changed you as a person? What has it taught you, and what is it? What has it taught you about life and the way you look at things?
It's such a hard question. I would say one of the things is it's helped me learn to let go, because sometimes I'm very much a prepper. I'm a planner. So like when I go on trips, if it was up to me, I would have every hour of the day, like, oh, this is where we're going. We got to drive this many miles to here, make sure we're here on time to check in, you know, that kind of stuff. But that's not reality. You always run into stuff. And not only is it not reality, if you do that, you sometimes stop yourself from other experiences you could have. Like so many of the best things that I've seen or experienced are just like a random place we stopped or a detour, or we saw a sign for something and decided to go there. So if I hadn't let myself have any wiggle room basically to have that, you may not experience as many things. So that's kind of something I've learned to plan for, have extra time planned in for things, and not only in travel, but also in life. That's, you know, sometimes that what you think are distractions are actually the thing that are the most worthwhile.
That's great. Well, I appreciate you doing this. The book is called Go See America, and they can get it on where
can get it on Amazon. It's out now. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, people, wherever you get your finer books, you can see Go See America. But I appreciate you reaching out, man. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Matt Torrey, everybody. For spontaneous travelers, Winging It is the perfect listen. James Hammond shares stories and tips from 75-plus countries. Find it at voyescape.com.